Okay, good afternoon. Hello, and happy holidays. We certainly have enough snow for the season. If you go out there, we also have enough slush. I don't know what the French word for slush is. What? Slush. Okay. Beaucoup de slush. Okay. Anyway, thank you all for being here. We've got a lot going on, as you can tell from the agenda, so I'm not going to be a speaking head. I'm just going to go through some things really quickly. First thing I'd like to do is to thank everyone who contributed to SunTrade and those of you who are involved in events. It was a very, very special time, and Nazi and Jennifer and Ron Tucky were the main organizers. I wish to thank them particularly and by name. We raised over $2,000. That was a very good thing. Unfortunately, we're not going to have a holiday party at the end of this year. I hope that you have little celebrations within your own groups. We have already in the dean's office. That was a very festive affair. If things let up at all in terms of being able to do more with hospitality expenses in the new year, then sometime in the new year when it's very grim and dark and dreary, we'll try to do something. But we've been asked specifically to cut down on hospitality events right now. I'm not happy about that, but it's just something we had to do. Everybody's kind of doing that. The budget situation at the university remains unclear, except that it is not good. Precisely how not good is open to interpretation, but I think that we anticipate having some cuts still in this fiscal year because we have gotten more cuts from the government this fiscal year. We don't know any more about that, but those kinds of cuts the library's been held harmless from before, so I'm essentially not going to worry about anything right now. The biggest problem that we're having right now is not being able to do some recruitment for staff, and that's particularly problematic for us, and we are going to try to justify a couple of very essential positions that we need to do something about as quickly as we possibly can. We are delighted that we have a new provost, and I will have a new reporting line. I feel, and many of us are absolutely delighted that Chris Manfredi will be our next provost. He's someone who's been a friend to the library for quite some time, is on the steering committee for the feasibility study. The steering committee is a smaller committee that actually does things, and so he knows everything that's going on with it, and he's very supportive. We're getting lots of support and some good press about the feasibility study. I hope that all of you read the article in the Gazette yesterday, which was upbeat and almost accurate. We have 600,000 rare and special collections volumes, not 60,000. And there was something else there. Anyway, there's new books per year is about 40,000. And there, I don't know if there were corrections made yet.
A2
corrections. Whoop. Yep. Well, thank you. Anyway, Karen Seidman, who sometimes is not a great, who does, sometimes her articles aren't as upbeat as this one was, but it was very upbeat, and we're very happy. The advisory committee for science and engineering and life sciences, essentially for Schulich, just voted today to pass a resolution in support of the feasibility study and how important it is to the university. So I think that that's a very strong affirmation of what we're doing and how important it is to people. Also, and that came from the floor. It came from a member of the committee. We didn't even ask him to do it. And we hope that other advisory committees will do the same. Just as a reminder, the feasibility study is supported in real dollar terms by our friends. And it's called the Friends Feasibility Study, which is a, they have given several tens of thousands of dollars to the feasibility study, which is also an affirmation of the importance of this project to the community as a whole and the importance of philanthropy. This project, as I said, will have to be funded through philanthropy, through the province, and probably through federal funds when, in the end, it's finally done. Okay. I'm going to switch to just talking a little bit more about the feasibility study. We are now at the point where next week the architects will be here for the third time. They're only going to be here for a day this time, but they'll be meeting with other stakeholder groups. But primarily what we'll be doing are very intense working meetings with the steering group, with the project team, to try to come up with some real answers of things that we don't have answered yet. We know that we are not comparing well to peers in terms of user space. We are certainly not comparing well in terms of storage, formal storage. I put a question out to the ARL director's listserv. ARL libraries that are attached to universities, there are 115, 116 of them. And I asked, just let me know if you do not have a storage, formal storage, nor do you have a plan that's going to come to fruition soon. And the only ones who do not, the only ones I got responses from are Saskatchewan, Connecticut, Tennessee, Louisiana State University, Brigham Young, New Mexico, Arizona, and Houston. So literally, I can assume that everybody else does. And that's not the kind of company we, you know, I'm not going to be elitist, but that's not the kind of company we normally keep. So we are behind in some things. A reminder that the architects will be back three more times in the winter, whatever we call it here. We call it that spring semester at home. Apparently, it's the winter semester here. We don't have a winter semester in Texas. We have fall, and then we have spring. And here we have fall and winter and. Yeah, no spring. I don't know, whatever it is. So in any case, they will be here for three more times, and at the end of it, we will get some cool drawings. We're also having to do, there's a whole lot of work that's going on in the background, because we are thinking of every combination of spaces for collections, for staff space, for user space that we can possibly think of, if for no other reason to eliminate them. Some of them are no-brainers. You think, you know, you have to suggest this idea, and then you say there's absolutely no way that could work, but we're having to think it through in a very logical, meaningful way. So that's basically what's going on. We did have a dean's working group meeting this week, and that's just the deans with the provost, the current provost, the new provost. The next provost was sitting there as a dean. And mostly what people are talking about is just trying to get our hands around the budget. It's really, we're talking the deficit and the amount of money that we're in the hole is now in multiples of tens of millions of dollars. So it's kind of hard to get your head around it and exactly what we're going to be doing. But we anticipate at this point that the university still anticipates that it will honor all agreements for payroll increases. So that's as of, obviously, we absolutely have to honor the collective bargaining agreements that we've met, but our M's and our academic staff don't have collective bargaining agreements. But so that's what we know. That's what I know right now. And if I know anything different or further, then I'll let you know. Okay, any questions about anything I've talked about before we keep going? Yes.
You mentioned you had put out a message to the ARL directors.
Yes.
Yes. And you said that based on the responses you got, that only a few libraries said that they did not have
formal storage.
Yes. Regarding the ones, so those presumably are the ones who told you, no, we do not have. Regarding the others, did they all answer, yes, we do, or did some of them answer, yes, we do, and the others didn't answer at all?
No, I asked the question in such a way that I didn't spam the listserv, because I already know that most of them do, and I didn't want to get 100 responses that went out to everybody on a listserv. So I already know that, for instance, all CIC has them, all Ontario has a project going. UBC has storage, Calgary has storage, Toronto has storage, all the UC system has storage, all the CIC system has storage, all Texas has storage, all Harvard, Ivy League, I know all those. So I was trying to find out those, the odd ones that didn't. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We will continue then here with... Okay, are we still on this page? Yeah, we're still
there
here.
We go.
Yeah.
I don't have any pockets, so this could be problematic.
You're just going to hold it.
Great. We have a new... Sorry, Lori is next.
No,
I'm next.
You're back. You're still with this. See your names on that one.
Sorry. I wasn't... unless there are questions about the feasibility study, I was going to zip on to the facilities update.
Move on.
Good. Lori, unless you want to do your assessment now?
Why don't you just stay up there and... All
right. Okay, but I have all sorts of wonderful slides, which we'll come back to. All right, great. Sorry about that. Two stories to tell you. One is about the Schulich Science and Engineering building. I'll also comment on the curtain wall here at Redpath and a wonderful update on the washrooms in Redpath. Those are my three topics. But starting with Schulich, there has been an intensive investigation into the exterior of Schulich. That's been ongoing. Our Schulich colleagues have been living through it. The project is just about finished, so by the new year, the scaffolding will be down, and we will all continue to function within that building. What they have done, they've done an in-depth analysis of the masonry to determine what is the extent of any damage, which we know there has been, and how do we make it totally secure and safe so that the building can keep on functioning as is. So so it is an analysis project and a patch project. It's not pretty. Obviously there will need to be work done in the future should funding be available to do a proper exterior masonry repair job. So what they have done is they've gone around the entire skin, all four sides, investigated and repaired. So I'm going to walk you around the building so you can see what's happened, but know that everything is solid and safe, and we will continue to operate within that building. We're still waiting for the final report from the project, so we can give you more on that when we know it, but this is what we know now. When the scaffolding comes down, which will come down before Christmas, as I understand it, they will have repaired with a number of different surfaces. There's a lot of concrete. There is steel that's propping things up, and I'll just walk you around the building. Oops, sorry. This is the south side of the building facing Sherbrooke Street, and that's the wonderful former entrance, which is now an emergency exit. You can see they've done a lot of work on this corner. That's the southwest corner. They've done a lot of work around the beautiful portico, and here and around the windows. You can see where they photoshopped in. They've taken the masonry off and put concrete to shore it up. Wherever you see bolts photoshopped in, that's they've bolted some material, probably steel. And they've also, they have shored up these decorative pieces with steel to keep it solid and safe. Also here where there's some, I'm just blocking you, you've seen this? And then around the windows, those have been repaired. So that's the south side. As we continue around to the west side overlooking the campus, you can see that problematic corner. That's been, that's the poured concrete there. We are going to get more information about this window, whether or not it will be covered or opened up. But at this point, it has some sort of material in it. I don't think it's concrete. That's just a Photoshop image, but we'll know more about this window shortly. And then they've done some work here around the turret, and you'll see the bolts along the side. So they've really been busy, and you've heard them as they've been working. Carrying along, this is the entrance to Schulich. So this is the north side. You can see this has been repaired and propped. Work done here, and that's where the primary a balcony area that's been worked on. And finally, on the eastern side, some work done along this pillar with bolts and some sort of material. I believe it's concrete. So it's sturdy, it's strong, it will not leak. They've patched, but it will not be the beautiful masonry that you've seen before. Cracks have been filled in. It's ready to go. I'm pleased that the staff are able to get back into their offices on the main floor, that you'll be in there in the new year, and I'm really glad that your conference room is working again. But the interior spaces for staff or for students will remain boarded, as I understand it. If anything changes, we'll keep you posted. Any questions on that from the Schulich folks?
So no sort of nasty structure. It's just skin, things like that.
That's correct. Yes, and any work that did require propping up, like the decorative balcony and so on, that was structural. They've repaired that, but not in a heritage magnificent way. Right. Okay. The Redpath curtain wall. This is a live shot. The frame, the aluminum frame, has all been installed. We've learned that because this is all custom, until that's in place, they can't order the glass because the glass people have to come and measure to the millimeter so it fits. So now that this is done, they've measured, the glass has been ordered, and it will be installed after January 19th. It will probably take several weeks. So we hope that this is operational and back to normal in early February. And what they will be doing is over the holidays, they'll remove the scaffolding. They're going to install plywood boards along the window section. It's going to be wrapped and insulated, as I understand it, Francisco, and it will remain secure and drafts eliminated. I do have a critter update. That's Francisco, can you tell them?
I sent a message earlier today. For over close to a month, we had a critter in the area. We had mice, and then last one was a raccoon. So it took us 2 days to get it safely. I was informed that in the morning today it was captured, everything went safe. And we've asked as well to the contractor to make sure, you know, all the holes are properly filled. The insulation tarp is going to help as well to make sure, one, for the heat, and second, to avoid any other visitors. And hopefully the problem is solved. But if there's anything, feel free to let us know immediately.
Or both.
Yeah. people were saying, you know, there's something up there. I think it's a mouse. And then people would say, no, I think it's a squirrel. And then someone said, this is much bigger than a squirrel. So, and it truly was. Any questions about anything related to facilities? Oh, yes, yes. Great news, great news. We've been working with the washroom committee, which consists of students, our staff, and it's a really great team from facilities. We have a plan approved, and it's up on the tender site to select contractors for a dramatic expansion for washrooms on the Redpath main floor. 15 stalls for women. 4 or 5 for men, and a universal gender-neutral washroom. Lots of changing tables, fabulous, on budget, and it will be built over the summer. So the students are thrilled, and it's been a very good experience with getting their input.
And I would just like to mention that part of that was because that came out as one of the very hot things in our planning exercise. There, everybody who works with the public here, in every one of the three sessions that I was in, it came out really loudly and clearly. And so I had enough courage to actually ask the students to do that with their money, which they hate to spend on things that they consider operational.
Great. Good. And you need the remote, and I'll hold that for you.
Thanks.
Oh, and a fun fact, the code for the number of students we have on the floor, we should have 15 women's stalls on that floor. That's the minimum we should have to meet the building code and the number of people, so we're grossly undersized with just two. So it'll make a huge difference.
Okay, on to a different type of topic, assessment update. So the update, I just wanted to give you a quick update on some of the activities that I'm working on and that the assessment advisory, the Library Assessment Advisory Committee has been working on. But I don't want to take up too much time. So I'll just let you know that in the new year, sometime in early 2015, there'll be a launch of an assessment section of the library website. And there will also be a lot of content added on the intranet with resources to assist with library assessment for those interested or working on projects, and also for actual data on assessment, whether it's from McGill Library or other organizations that we'll link you to. So when that's available, I will send a message out to the entire library system to let you know. But that's just to let you know that it's coming. And in the meantime, and even after that, you can always ask me for assistance or resources or, you know, whatever projects you're working on, if you have questions about how I can help support you or point you in the right direction, I'm happy to help out with that. But I hope that that the internet will also be nice, because it'll let you know about all the kinds of assessment projects that are out there that are being done, or the tools you might not even know are available. And the website will be a great way to communicate, not just with staff, but with the wider community, about the results of our assessment efforts and what we're doing about them. Another tool that I was hoping to already have, but you know how it goes, the software is supposed to be available and the company is late in providing it. But the tool we use now, LibAnalytics, to keep track of reference and instruction statistics, is also supposed to give us to create a product, which I'm hoping to use, because we could also upload all of our statistics there over the years, which means it would be much easier for you to access it and play around with it and visualize the data and look at trends and things. So again, I don't know when we'll get that, but hopefully in 2015, and I'll let you know about that as well. One of the things that I'm hoping to do on the assessment website is also to share with the community the projects, the big projects that are going on, and smaller projects as well. So I'll just let you know about two of those that are coming up. LabQual. So we're going to do LabQual again in 2015. The survey will be run, this has to be confirmed, but it will likely be run the way it usually is, which is right after the students, I think they're, I'll call it study break. So that will be March 9th is the Monday, and so we'll launch the survey. We would normally launch that survey on March 9th if we get approval from the university. It's a sampled survey, which means we don't send it to everyone in the community. We send it to a sample that's randomly chosen. During that time, the library will not be running any other surveys. We really want to get a good response rate. We usually do for LabQual. So if you are thinking about doing your own assessment activities or you want to run a survey, just get in touch with me. We'll always coordinate with you. But during that time, from March 9th until about mid to late April, the library is running LabQual. So we'll be serving undergraduates, graduate students, all the user community. One different thing this time compared to the last time we ran the survey in 2013 is we will also be sampling some library staff. We didn't sample library staff last time, but you will be, so you may be invited to participate in the survey. And also we will only be inviting a section of the faculty, so the professoriate. Instead of asking all of them, we usually don't sample them, we ask all of them to answer the survey. So instead of asking all faculty, we will ask all the faculty within the Faculty of Arts, the School of Music, management, education, and the School of Continuing Studies. I think that's it. We will be excluding the sort of science, technical, and medical fields for now, and we'll, next time we do the survey, we'll ask them. So this way, when we do the survey, we'll alternate so faculty aren't being asked every year or two to answer the same survey. So not all faculty will be invited this year. It's all the non-science and medical fields. So everybody but the Faculty of Science and the Faculty of Medicine and the Faculty of Dentistry. And engineering, yeah, this is a faculty, yeah. So and agriculture and environmental sciences, yeah, thank you. I don't have the list in front of me. So law will be surveyed this year, yeah. Okay, the other survey that we're going to start in 2015, I don't have the exact start date, is a different kind of survey. It's called MINDS, which is a strange name, but it stands for Measuring the Impact of Networked Electronic Services. It's basically understanding why people use our e-resources, something we spend a lot of money on and people use every day, constantly, as we know, and they get in touch with us when something doesn't work. It's really important to them. So this is a survey. It's a protocol from the Association of Research Libraries. And so basically we follow that study protocol and we run it here at McGill and you run it over a period of a year. Some university libraries just run it all the time. What it does is it samples people, so not everybody sees the survey all the time. Some people will never see it. Some people might see it a few times. But about every 200th use of an e-resource, a survey will pop up. It will only have 4 or 5 questions and they just quickly answer the survey before they get to see the e-resource, the journal article, for instance. And it just asks them about themselves, and it captures the time and the resource they're using already. Just asks them who they are, like, are you an undergraduate, what faculty are you in, and are you using this for research or for study, is it sponsored research or not, that kind of thing. I'll tell you more about this survey when it comes out. I just wanted to let you know that it's something that will happen also in 2015. Other ongoing projects, if you're a librarian, you might know that there's a pilot project, so if you're interested in having your instruction peer-reviewed, that there is a plan and a project for that, and some librarians are involved in that. If you're interested in learning more about it, just let me know. And I also just wanted to let you know that I haven't given you an update on LabQual in a while, and it's because I don't have a lot to tell you, but that doesn't mean we're not trying to work on it. So in early January, you should get an email from Isabel and I with further plans about how we're going to move on the workplace initiatives that should follow through from the LabQual assessment that we did in early 2013. If you have any questions, you can ask them now during my presentation or at the end. But here's the main thing I wanted to talk to you about is the results of our visitor survey. So for those of you who are here on November 18th, you probably noticed, or you were very heavily involved in the survey that we ran. I think it was very successful. I just wanted to give you some of the background. Well, first I wanted to say thank you to everybody who volunteered to be at the doors on those days. Without you, we would not have collected all the results that we did. I also want to thank the staff, especially from Digital Initiatives, who helped with a lot of the logistics. Marika, who helped with a lot of the promotion and the survey itself. And all of the people, especially in the Dean's Office and elsewhere, who did data entry of all of the print surveys that we collected. Somebody had to enter all that data. And I entered maybe a few hundred of them, but I think that Diane must have entered thousands of them herself. And many other people, Susan and otherwise, did that. So we wouldn't have had if people hadn't volunteered to do that data entry. So here are the results. Just to give you some context, there were almost 15,000 gate counts that day. That means that there were 15,000 people who came in. That includes staff, that includes repeat visitors, and that's around the clock for all branches. Over 2,500 people logged into a computer in one of the McGill libraries that day, and 1,800 items were loaned. in like they were initial loans not renewed that day. In terms of survey responses, we had just over 6,600 people responded to the survey. If we take that and compare it to the gate count, that's a response rate of 44%. Now, that's not really the response rate because it's probably a little bit higher because those 15,000 people who came in the gate, some of them were library staff and they weren't eligible, or they may have been cleaning staff. They may have been repeat visitors who refused to kind of didn't want to answer the survey again because they were just coming in and out to go to the washroom or something. So in some cases, it's probably much higher. But the response rate did vary between branches. So some it looks more like 30%, whereas some branches it looks more like in the 60s or 70% response rate. So that's pretty good, considering if you were at the McLennan doors that day, you saw the influx of people. It's pretty hard to catch everybody coming through the door. So to get 44% is very nice in a survey happening on one day. So here you can just see the distribution of how many responses we received over different hours. I wanted to tell you, before I go, 80% of those survey responses were on paper. So that means that almost 4,000 of those were entered by hand afterwards by library staff so that I could calculate all of this stuff. This one? Sure. So you can see it's not a, well, you know, this is the survey response rate. The survey responses. So it may not correlate with the number of people who came in through the gate at that time. And also it can vary by branch. On the ends, you're going to see it's lower, but it's also lower because less branches were collecting surveys between 8 and 9 and between 5 and 6. And I didn't even put between 6 and 7 on this. Oh, that is 6 and 7, sorry. Okay. So survey responses by branch. Obviously, there were a lot of people in McLennan. So we had over 3,500 of those surveys were from McLennan users. And the other branches, it's less. But this is who came into our library on November 18th and responded to a survey. So of those 4,600 people, a huge majority of them were undergraduate students. And the next highest group were graduate students. And then we had a few professors and instructors, some staff, some postdocs, some medical residents. About 2% said they were from another university. Another 2% or so said they were members of the public. When we break down just the McGill users, again, you can see 85% were undergraduates, 12% were graduate, and then just a few of the rest. So 85% of people who came into a library on November 18th and who agreed to fill out our survey were undergraduate students. If you look at the faculty that the student reported they belonged to, it's at the bottom, so I don't know if you can all see it in the back, but it's the arts faculty, obviously, is very large faculty. It includes lots of different departments, but we just asked them to put which faculty. So you can see that there's a huge number from just the arts faculty. And the next most popular group to come in are from science. But keep in mind, some of these faculties, the number of students in them are very, very small compared to the Faculty of Arts and the Faculty of Science. And so the percentage of people from that faculty who used the library on November 18th was larger than the percentage of the arts faculty. There's a lot of data here, and I crunched a lot of numbers. I'm only showing you some of the results. I'm trying to pique your interest. If you're interested in all of the results, or you're interested in looking at analysis for your branch or a certain group, you can ask me and I can easily provide it. I've also put the information on the intranet. I'll send a link out right after Dean's Corner. And you can play around with that data. The raw data is there and there's a pivot table. And you can plunk in whatever you're interested in and see the breakdown that you're interested in that data. So the faculty of the survey respondents here are broken down. You can just see the percentage. Arts is the biggest percentage of visitors and then science. And the reason, or they also had to give their primary reason for visiting, and the reason that was at the top of the list for them to choose, which most of them did, was that they were at the library to study or get work done alone. Some of them were here to study or do their work in a group. And that was a huge majority of people. And after that, there were things like consult or borrow print materials, use the printer or the scanner, or access a computer or the internet. And then the other reasons. Okay, so this is an interesting table. This basically just tells us the percentage of the population. If you count the number of users who said they were from a particular group, how much of that group as a whole at McGill showed up at McGill libraries that day. So there are almost 27,000 undergraduate students at McGill, but over 5,000 people who came to the library said they were undergraduate students. That means that of the people who answered our survey, which still isn't even everyone, that 20% of the Faculty of Arts students came into the library in one day on November 18th. They came through the doors of one of our branches, and that 8% of graduate students came to the library on that one day. So that's what that breakdown is for, just to show you the percentage. And if you look, even the professors, 2% of professors came to the library that day. So that's the data that I have for you right now. But if you have any questions, or I have all the tables with me, if you have a specific question you want me to answer, I can try to answer it. Yeah.
What do you think the significance of the computer login figure is? Because somebody could come in at 9 o'clock in the morning and stay logged in all day, and that only counts the computers that we offer users. It doesn't include people who came in with laptops and use Wi-Fi. So what is the importance of that figure?
I don't know about the importance.
Seems low to me. 2,500 seems low.
It's 1,800. Oh, no, sorry, you're right. It's 2,500. I'm thinking of the loans.
So if somebody could come in at
yeah, for 4 hours, as opposed to someone logging in for 15 minutes. Well, it's helpful. I put it here to give you context. So the question was about why the computer logins, what do they mean? And, of course, they represent different things. The same way someone can come into the library and stay all day, or they can come in and out, you know, and stay 10 minutes each time, or they come for half an hour and leave versus people who sit there all day. But it was more to give the context. That's a busy day. And so a busy day, we have 1,800 different people or different computer logins. Could be the same people logging in multiple times because they log off. Just as a side note, about 40 of those people were guests. The rest of them had McGill logins. So I get that information for every month and every day. If you're ever curious to know how many people use your library, or you think there's a lot of non-McGill users, I have all that data. They send it to me from IT, so I can see that. And we can see the pattern of computer usage. So that's a busy day at McGill, is 1,800 logins, and that's more context. Sure. I would assume so, yeah. But that's, you know, those are the resources that we have available and that we can count. So just as a comparison, we have that there, and that's all it means.
You could know how many people use Wi-Fi in the building when they're taking them, and you have to get it from the CS or something.
Perhaps I could, yeah. I can look into how to find that out. I don't know if we can find out where they physically are, if they're in the library or not. Any other questions or suggestions? I thought that it went fairly well, the visitor survey. I don't know when and if we'll ever have one again. We have really good data from this one, but you know, we've learned a few things of how to do it next time, but I just want to thank you again for everyone who cooperated and everyone who filled in for someone who was standing at a door or helping out. I could not have done it. It had dozens of people not volunteer to help, especially we kind of had short notice on this, so thanks a lot. Okay.
I'd like to just make a couple of comments on this.
Thank you. First, I have to thank Lori, who did a really bang-up job in organizing this at a very short amount of time, and really everybody who did bar the doors and ask people to fill it out. And Isabel Roberge was one of those people entering a lot, thousands and thousands of those as well. So I wanted to make sure that people knew that. The reason why we did this was because part of the feasibility study. One of the things that we were hearing, we had to validate our own impressions because we were hearing different things from different focus groups about about how our buildings were being used. And not surprisingly, students were telling us one thing about how students use the buildings, and faculty were telling us something different. And we thought, we agreed with students and not with faculty. So we really did have to run this to validate what our assumptions were. There are many of you, or several of you here, who read the OCLC perceptions report, and this totally validates what's going on in North America and that survey as a whole, which shows that our students are coming into our buildings in huge numbers, and they're coming here to work. They aren't just coming to goof around. They aren't coming here to take a nap.
They're coming here to work, and you can really see how this validates that study. And when you have studies that reinforce the results of other studies, that's a good thing. I think it's really, really, really interesting to some of the myths that were a little bit, I mean, you know, this isn't, myths is a little bit too strong, but there were some real opinions that that had been stated that that all students didn't use all libraries. Well, we now know that's not true. I mean, there are, music has every kind of, everybody from every sort of discipline, law, Berks, there are students of every discipline in every one of our libraries. And they're really mixed up. It just happens to be where someone finds a spot where they're comfortable. And then they kind of stake that place out through their entire university experience. The other is that the feeling that this was such a residential campus that students didn't need the library spaces. Well, we've got, I don't know, I was counting stuff up here, and this was only a 9-hour period, 10-hour period. I can't even remember. It's not, and don't forget, we're open 24 hours a day. If you count students, postdocs, residents, graduate students, you're in the neighborhood of between 25 and 30% of our population was here at that time. That's huge. So what we really have discovered is that there aren't enough coffee shops around the university where all these people are. They aren't there, they're here. And when they come in from the residences or they come in from home, then they try to stay here all day, and this is one of the few places they can come on campus, and they do, and they come here and they work. So there's some really, really, really good data in here. And if you look at the circulation data, it's interesting. If you look at the purposes why people are here, it's tremendously interesting. You can see, I mean, everybody's from everywhere. But anyway, if Lori has put all this stuff up, I think it's fascinating, and it really. You know, it's really good to get some data that validates assumptions. So assessment's really important. Okay, so does anybody have any further questions or observations about any of this? Anything in here that really surprises anybody? No? Okay. Okay, we've got Isabel.
Good afternoon, everybody. So for some of the news, you'll see your update. You've read in the weekly update since September. I'm probably going to have a scoop for tomorrow, and the scoop for tomorrow in the weekly update will be the successful candidate for the search in music, so stay tuned. Just a little teaser for tomorrow weekly update.
Explain to people why we're still.
Oh, yes, we're still hiring for that because you remember back in October, November,
yeah. The
announcement of the provo?
Yeah.
The provo had announced a hiring freeze on the admin and support position and management position. This position was posted prior to his announcement, so we received the green light to proceed with the search. Just like we would have on a normal day. So this is why we proceeded with that search. It took a little bit of time, but we have a successful candidate and are just finalizing the offer before making it official. So concerning the HR update, this fall it was more synonymous of posting and reposting than interviews for the search committee. But nonetheless, the search committee was successful into filling two vacancies, one of them being a liaison librarian role in USL, a tenure-track appointment for Michael David Miller, who's with us today. Congratulations, Michael. And also we left a we filled a position, a specialized cataloging editor and acquisition assistant in the unit of collection development with Anna Di Pietro in collection services, and the candidate was promoted. It was an internal promotion for Rosa Pellucci. She's not with us, but congratulations, Rosa. Also this fall, we extended appointment for three of our colleagues, Pamela Harrison from Schule. Jean-Marc Tremblay in the back with Archives. And also Darren Crow, who's working in Schule. We'll say farewell in the new year to one of our colleagues. Digital Initiative on January 5th will lose Ron Tukey. Ron joined the library in May 2011. And also there was a sad note from Schulich last October. We've learned that our colleague Denise Goulin lost her battle against cancer. She was with us, with McGill, for over 45 years. As for recruitment update, as you saw, we have a few positions that are being advertised currently. The librarian cataloger for collection services, data reference for user services. This is a third posting for that position. We have a brand new position in digital initiative as coordinator of data curation and scholarly communication. We have still the head of copyright for the copyright office, scholarly communication librarian. As you remember, Amy Buckland, who was wearing multiple hats, left last fall. So this is in replacement for Amy's role. We have a non-tenure track position also that's being advertised. As liaison librarian, this position will be kind of a backfill for the upcoming sabbatical leave within the libraries, maternity leave, paternity leave, we never know, but any type of leaves. And well, like I was mentioning at the beginning, the senior reference assistant position for music is here, but now for the purpose of this meeting, an offer has been made and we're finalizing it. Upcoming search, search committee, let's rest over the holidays because we have a few posting ending. And in addition, we're thinking and wishing to fill some of those vacancies, director of and university archivist, and we have a few admin and support positions, as Dean Cook mentioned to you earlier, that will write to the central and senior administration and ask permission to fill because they're very critical to the operation of the library, one being in the dean's office in Diane's group, a financial administrator position, one in the dean's office, an administrative assistant position, a programmer analyst in replacement of Ron Tukey, and a senior library clerk in Schulich in replacement of Denise. So that's it about recruitment. I don't know if there's any question, because if not, we'll move on to my favorite part,
yes,
which is the pins. So 2014 was a very important year for many of our colleagues, and I have my little Berks box. And we're ready to celebrate.
So,
good, she's back.
So if individuals can come up.
Yes, our first.
Do you want to do bundles or pins?
But you're the dean, you do both.
Do I get to do both?
You do both.
Okay. I wanted to do the bottom. I was going to get both.
You want
Rebecca?
The, yeah, Rebecca this year is celebrating 15 years of services.
Whoa!
only 25.
Hey, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Did we photo op? Okay.
It's Rebecca's birthday also. Woo! Woo!
Our pleasure. I can't get used to the camera takers when they're looking this way instead of at you right away.
We have also 30 years, Peter.
Congratulations. This is a contrast between Rebecca and for sure.
And also okay. 30 years, Elizabeth Thompson from
the Congratulations.
There's also Peter Rahacek, who's celebrating 30 years, but he couldn't be with us.
Okay.
Now to the 35 years.
Ooh.
Nalini Vaga from Assol.
Okay.
We'll pass by after.
Yeah.
Maria de Souza.
Nadine.
That's Nalini.
Ah. Here you are.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. We didn't get it. It's messed up.
Sorry.
Okay.
Gave you the wrong one.
Whoops. Okay. Oops.
And Eleni couldn't be with us. Lisa Bai couldn't be with us. Well, Angela, was not supposed to be here, and Gail cannot be with us. So the next slide is for the 40 years. We have
45.
40 years. We have 40. Ivy De Souza, but she. And
oh,
then
okay.
Ivy De Souza, she's with us. She's on at 16.
I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, she's very obsessed with this one.
Yes.
And finally, 45 years. All right.
Of course, I wasn't born when you started. A few of the people in here weren't. Anyway, so is this it?
That's it.
Oh, the jewelry's always fun. Okay, we do have. Yeah, we have a little reception that will be unveiled with when we put up the screen. So please stay and have a cookie, as though we didn't have lots of cookies at this point. And congratulate our colleagues. Thank you so much. Yeah.